This is episode 401. Fertility is dropping at an alarming rate, and on the other end of the life cycle, disease numbers continue going up and up and up, despite us being in the most abundantly educated and resourced time in the planet's history. So if you're someone with gut issues, you want to improve your fertility, men and women, raise a healthy child with a good brain development, or you just want to help reduce your inflammation so that you can prevent diseases, then you're in the right place, because on this episode, we have the CEO and founder of Fitality Nutrition, whom specializes in creating sustainable sources of vitamins, minerals, and more specifically, omegas 3s, 6s, and 9s. Yes, omega 9s are a thing. Fitality Nutrition does this by cultivating a marine life form called phytoplankton, and it's also good for vegans too. What is phytoplankton? How does it work? And who needs it? That's what we're talking about on this episode. So let's dive in.
Welcome to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. You've tuned in because you want to start taking your health seriously so you don't, well, get sick and die. Here we talk all things health, nutrition, and human optimization. Let's jump into it with your host and resident scientist, Maddie Lansdowne.
What's up, my healthy friends? Welcome back to today's show, where this year it's my mission to coach 500 people to get control of their sugar cravings and sugar binges so they can stop yo-yo dieting, stop obsessing about food, and finally create a body that they feel confident being in. The links for that are down in the show notes or the caption below. Now, on this episode, we have Mr. Mark Pages returning to the show, originally found on episode 275 of this show, and he's back for a second dose of awesomeness. Now, Mark has extensive experience with world trade, given his years managing distribution channels across Africa, the Middle East, and Europe. This background gives him a unique skill set for research and being able to understand and accurately speak about sustainability, particularly when it comes to nutrition, seafood, and the ocean. This led him to invest heavily in R&D facilities to help solve some of the world's modern nutrition and sustainability issues. And he's doing so with great success. And he's here to bring us into that conversation with him today. Mark, welcome back to the show, mate.
Thanks, Maddie. Thanks for having me back on episode 401. Grateful to be back and talk to you about the latest and greatest in the world of phytoplankton and algae.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you're here. And I know that there's so many ways that we can take this conversation, but maybe just because a lot of people, this might be the first time they've heard this conversation or even the word phytoplankton. And on the episode 275, we talked about the difference between what that is and spirulina and stuff like that. But maybe we can just do a bit of a quick recap. What's phytoplankton and how is it different to things like spirulina and chlorella and stuff like that?
Yeah, I guess just going back to that last show, that was one of the things that Matt and I had discussed early on, like when he came across what we do, you know, what is this amazing microscopic plant called phytoplankton? You know, I've heard of spirulina and chlorella, but what is phytoplankton? So I guess phytoplankton, primordial marine plant, a microscopic single cell plant, and it comes from the ocean. So it comes from an oceanic environment where you predominantly have like salt and pH, and that's where most of the phytoplankton in the world naturally grow. So there's about anywhere between 100,000 to 300,000 different strains of phytoplankton in the ocean. And I guess, you know, one of the things we're learning about is more and more about these different strains and how they may have health benefits for us. What we know about phytoplankton, it is really the start of primordial life. So they're some of the first plant-based living cells on the planet, and they really form the foundation not only of the oceanic sea chain, but the food chain in general on the planet.
That's one of the things I find really interesting about the phytoplankton, and from the conversations that you and I have had, is that the way that you often describe it is like it's what the fish eat in order for the fish to be high in omegas. And so it's like going back to the source of omega-3s is instead of eating the fish, you can just eat what the fish eat.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this is what a lot of people don't realize, you know, that fish don't make omega-3s. They get omega-3s at the base of the sea chain from these microscopic plants. So, you know, all omega-3 in fish is fish oil, not made by fish, but fish oil on a journey, you know, a journey that originated from plants called phytoplankton. And this is the main difference between spirulina and chlorella. So spirulina and chlorella are what I would call freshwater strains of microalgae. So they're typically isolated in estuaries or rivers, environments that have a lower salt pH than the ocean. For that reason, due to their natural environment, spirulina and chlorella, whilst they're abundant in a range of proteins and minerals and nutrients and great products, they don't have what I would call the omega-3 profile, in particularly the fish-free version, the long-chain omega-3s called EPA and DHA. So this is what really sets them apart from spirulina and chlorella, that more diverse range of nutrient profile.
And I think the way that a lot of people come into this conversation when you mention EPA and DHA is hearing that they should supplement fish oil, you know, and I know even as a kid, I grew up with mum and dad giving me a fish oil supplement along with my vitamin C supplement and a few other things. And so the idea that you can get omega-3s and these omegas from things that aren't fish usually surprises people, to the point that I've even, you know, in recent times had engagements with naturopaths and nutritionists and practitioners that when I've sort of explained some of your work and your products and stuff like that, they're sort of like, oh, I'm not too sure about that. You should probably get it from, you know, the fish. But it's like, if I'm understanding correctly, the actual molecule doesn't actually undergo any conformational change, right, from being eaten from the phytoplankton into the fish. It's the same molecule.
Yeah, that's correct, Matt. And that's a common question asked when people are on their learning journey, when they're learning about omega-3. So they typically say, well, you know, is the structure of the omega-3 chains and the, you know, the form of omega-3, its structural properties, is it the same in its original source algae or phytoplankton as it is in fish? And luckily there's good evidence and science to confirm that. So the University of Southampton in the UK, which is a leading lipids university in Europe, and our own University of Flinders in South Australia have done some research into this, and they have confirmed publicly, yes, there is no molecular structural difference to omega-3s from phytoplankton or algae versus fish. They're exactly the same. They behave the same. And as I said earlier, in fact, all of that fish oil is algal oil on a journey because it hasn't changed its structure. It's just being passed up the food chain.
And I guess the obvious thing that comes to mind for me in regards to sustainability is that it means we need to we don't need to kill so many fish to get the fish oil. And, you know, we're already harvesting so much fish, so many fish from the sea to feed people, and then also supplements as well. And the quality of those fish is getting lower and lower due to pollution and, you know, invading their habitat and that type of thing. Whereas it sounds like to me that, you know, solving a bit of the sustainability puzzle is that instead of that, we can just grow, because these plants are so small, we can grow, you know, an abundant amount of phytoplankton in a very small space and not have to kill the fish in the process.
Absolutely. So, yeah, so I guess, you know, one of the big things since the last episode, Matt, 15 months ago, is most of the fish oil for fish oil supplements comes from the Peruvian catch of what happened last year. They have two seasons for going out to harvest and the first harvest last year, they went out and after a week, they got, if I'm correct, about 4% of the biomass catch, 4% of the fish. And the Peruvian government said, stop, you have to come back. There's almost no fish in the sea. If we fish what's left, there may be no more to replenish for further harvests. So that was a bit of a shock in the industry, and that's not commonly spoken, you know, at a consumer or retail level. What happened is in the second half of the year, they did go back out and they did get a better biomass, a fish catch. I think they got somewhere in the vicinity of 65 to 70%. The problem is there was not a lot of fish oil in that catch. So the outcome of the situation is that we only have 15% of the global fish oil supply coming out of these Peruvian waters, out of the anchovy last season. And this is really now accelerated the issues around supply chain and sustainability of fish oil, because there's just, it's becoming scarce in terms of its availability.
Yeah, and I think as well, you know, when it comes to fish, and I think we might have touched on this in many of our conversations or different conversations we've had before, is just that the reality that even the fish themselves are getting less healthy. And that could be a result of farmed fishing. That can be a result of, you know, the pollution and stuff like that. And so you then obviously need more of the fish to try and get the same volume of fish oil out of them.
Well, yeah. I mean, some of the studies show that the fish that we catch are smaller and smaller. And fish, what we use the word bioaccumulate. So they bioaccumulate proteins, they bioaccumulate lipids. And when they have to eat smaller fish, so fish eating smaller fish, they're bioaccumulating less of the essential nutrients they need. And this was one of the theorized reasons why the oil content, the omega-3 oil content in the Peruvian catch was so low. And so the result of this is we're seeing shortages of fish oil in the supply chain coming through in the next 6 to 12 months.
Okay.
Either in cases where fish oil prices go up dramatically for supplements, or in other cases they're not available because you just can't get the product. It's in such shortage. So this is a great time for algae and phytoplankton to shine, because its sustainability benefits will be magnified with this information coming out shortly.
Yeah, that's incredible. And it's good to know, I guess, ahead of time that some of these prices are going to go up considerably. But I guess in regards to why we would buy these and the benefits and how they help the body and the nutrition, maybe let's dive into that conversation. And I know that we were going to talk about the gut microbiome and how the nutrition that's introduced to that space from phytoplankton can be so beneficial.
Yeah, definitely. So we'll just touch on the benefits of the omega-3s and then go into some of the new information and science that's come to fruition over the last year or so. So I guess, you know, when we're looking at these long-chain omega-3s, EPA as it's called, and DHA, these are different length omega-3 chains. So EPA has an 18 bonds on the chain and DHA has 20. And so what the body does is the body can, to a certain degree, upregulate the EPA from the lower bonds up to the larger bonds. Mm-hmm. So EPA has the benefit, clinically proven benefits, mainly around heart health, joint health, and anti-inflammatory benefits.
Right.
Some of those same benefits are also shown in DHA, but DHA is more clinically proven to support brain health, also shown to support pre-pregnancy, so supporting the ovary to get pregnant. And of course, elevated levels of DHA are required in the developing brain, in the fetus of a pregnant mother, and of course, in the breastfeeding phase and all the way through the developing brain. So DHA is really critical around brain development. So these different forms of omega-3 have different benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So that's type of generally known. I guess what we're learning in the last year is some of the additional benefits based on more clinical studies and more research. So one of the exciting things I'm love to tell you and your audience about today is the benefit that FITE gives, not only to providing microscopic nutrients for your health and well-being, but also helping the body absorb and assimilate the nutrients from other foods that you eat daily.
Right. That's good to know. Like, let's go into that.
Yeah. Thank you, Matt. So how the body works is we consume orally, you know, well, we eat every day, we consume a variety of food, and it goes into our gut, got enzymes and, you know, a microbiome, which is a whole diverse flora and enzymes that process our food. Typically in food, the micronutrient size in phytoplankton as a much smaller microscopic plant, we've learned, is much smaller than the typical particle size in food. So if we're talking as an example of iron or zinc or magnesium, these micronutrient particles, phytoplankton's particle size is half to one-third of the nutrients that originate from a terrestrial plant or that are in, you know, animals, because animals get their proteins and micronutrients at the end of the day from plants. So what does that mean if phytoplankton have much smaller particle sizes of micronutrients? It means that those micronutrients are much more bioavailable. Mm-hmm. So what we're seeing in clinics is that people that may have non-optimal digestive systems, you know, compromise liver or kidney or other a gut microbe, they find it hard to absorb the nutrients, even though they may be trying to improve their diet. Mm-hmm. Their gut, their microbiome and their enzymes aren't used to processing, you know, the healthy food. So there's some effort for nutrient absorption. When we introduce phytoplankton, what we see under the blood analysis is that the nutrients start assimilating and absorbing much easier into the cells. So phytoplankton, because of these particle sizes of nutrients are far smaller, they're actually aiding the microbiome in breaking down and absorbing the nutrients that we eat in our daily diet, as well as releasing, you know, its own phytonutrients, microscopic phytonutrients into the system. And this is why we call phytoplankton micronutrients micronutrients, because they're much smaller than what we typically would consume in everyday food.
Yeah, so they help transport it across the gut membrane into the blood, and it's easier because the particles are smaller and therefore it's like a filtration system, right?
So yes, I guess what we're seeing is the enzymes can break down, you know, the enzymes, if you've changed your diet and you're putting new nutrients into your system every day, enzymes have memory. So the process of breaking down different nutrients, your body has to adjust to it. Now, it makes sense if you take a smaller particle, add a smaller micronutrient in there, it's easier to break down a smaller micronutrient. If there's a new supply of micronutrients coming into your gut flora, then a larger particle. So it's type of like much more easier to absorb because it's much smaller. So basically what we understand is the enzymes can directly process much easier the phytoplankton micronutrients. Mm-hmm. And this helps them to assimilate to then be able to absorb easier, larger particle sizes. So it's like, I would say it's more bite-sized at a microscopic level.
Just imagining all the tiny little fish just feeding away when you say bite-size, micro bite-size. But I remember as well that when I was looking at your products and we were chatting about them, you know, not so long ago, in regards to the EPA and the DHA, you were talking about that the body has an ability to convert them. Because often when, as practitioners, we look for supplements that have both, or we try and get foods that have both in it. But when we've got the ability to convert, that kind of takes that point of conversation out of the mix, because we don't necessarily need to have supplements that have both, you know, from the get-go, or the food from the get-go, when the body can actually convert it. Is that right?
That's correct. So yeah, so typically, if we just have a quick summary, and I think we covered it in the last podcast, but I'll just give a short summary into that. So you've basically got four general types of omega-3. You've got ALA, which is the form in hemp, chia, and flax. Mm-hmm. And then we've got, of course, algal or fish that have this longer EPA-DHA chain. And you've got a few plants that have something in between. It's called SDA. So the body is very poor at processing ALA up to SDA, which therefore goes on to EPA. So ALA is 14 bonds. SDA is 16 bonds. So in the body, we have an enzyme that has to process from ALA, which is in hemp, chia, and flax, up to this longer form. Once we get to the SDA, the 16 bond form, the body can actually continue the process quite easily. It doesn't need that same enzyme called the D6 saturate to do that job. So what's important is once we're taking things at what we call SDA, 16 bonds or higher, the body can upregulate those quite easily. And that's why what we're learning more and more is it's more important to take higher doses of EPA and then let the body self-upregulate or self-convert to DHA as it's needed, because the body knows what it needs. As long as it can perform the function of converting or upregulating, we should let it do it in many applications on demand.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense.
There are a couple of instances or applications where I do think it's important to get higher levels of what we call preformed DHA. So DHA that is in its final preform state. And this is really around the area, these higher elevated amounts of DHA are needed in the pre-pregnancy stage, pregnancy, breastfeeding, and in the early, I call it infant brain development, anywhere up to that phase of, I would say, yeah, generally, definitely past two, but then, even up until 7 years old, DHA, the preformed DHA gets more important because DHA is critical around brain development. And so I think it's safer to take a EPA and DHA preformed in these stages where you need elevated DHA.
Yeah. And when you say need DHA or need EPA, how do we know? How do we know what we need? Like, do we test? Is there physical signs that we can look for in ourselves to be say, oh, I think I'm lacking in omegas?
Yeah. So just to split that question, Matt, if I could, into two segments. So we know we needed from the body of clinical research and evidence around the body's requirement to get these. So the body doesn't make these, the body doesn't make omega-3s. It can upregulate them, but we need to consume them as an essential nutrient for those benefits we've mentioned. The second point is, how do we know how much we have in our system? And, there's a great test, and I'll just show it to you now. It's called a test called the Omega Index Test. And what this test allows you very easily and simply to do at home is to basically test your own omega-3 by putting a little prick on your finger, a little swab, and then putting your finger onto a little plate or a little swab, and then sending that off to a lab in Australia for testing. And what we're finding is knowing your own personal omega-3 levels is really the key to optimal nutrient, taking that EPA or DHA in an optimal dose to, self-correct your own status.
Mum, mother, grandmother, nan, nana, and women with no kids. Have I got your attention? So I want you to imagine something. Go with me here. Imagine a life where even when you wake up tired and the kids are driving you mad and work sucks and things are problematic, that you're still in control of your food and you still make healthy choices without giving up and binging on chocolate and wine and saying, I'll try again tomorrow. It might be hard to imagine, but having freedom with your food is absolutely possible. And it starts by getting three things right. One, having a supportive community, building a strong connection with fellow emotional eating warriors. Two, having the right information delivered in the right way. And three, having a guide that can shine a light on the right path and have your back along the way. And that's me. Those three things are exactly what we've got for you inside the Healthy Mums Collective Facebook group for people just like you wanting to end their emotional eating and feel good in their own skin again. And currently, it's free to join. The link is in the show notes below. If you've struggled with diets or felt powerless around food, you're not alone. But let me assure you, this is a community that understands your battles and is ready to empower you into action. So what can you expect on the inside? Well, we have posts and content that push you a little out of your comfort zone. We do Facebook Lives, have interactive Q&A session, and it's simply a safe space to face your food challenges and be honest without concern of being judged. If you decide to join us, I have a complimentary How to Turn Food into Self-Confidence ebook for you as well, completely free. The Healthy Mums Collective thrives on support, authenticity, and experience-based practices. It's a community, so the beautiful people in it is where the magic comes from. To join us and be a part of that magic, head to the show notes, click the link, breeze through a few quick questions, and you'll be in the Healthy Mums Collective before you know it. Again, the link is in the show notes below. I'll see you in the DMs or on the welcome post in just a few moments. Yeah, it's like, I guess, all the things you're talking about, data derived, right? So getting that self-data, that self-information is incredibly powerful to know where your health status is at. I've got a question in the opposite direction, though. Can you overdo it? Can you supplement too much with this stuff?
I think there's not a lot of studies into this, but I do think you could. I mean, any the body is a functioning system of, you know, a whole variety of micronutrients, vitamins, lipids, and antioxidants. So I do think there are limits to how much omega-3 we should take. I think those limits are quite high. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when we go back and look at the figures, Maddie, so this test here that I'm just holding up from OmegaQuant, globally they've tested over the years over 500,000 people. And what they see in the Western world, you know, Australia, Canada, US, UK, New Zealand, what they see is the meta body of that evidence is 93% of people are deficient in long chain omega-3s, 93%. And this is of the people that also eat fish.
Is that as a result of the Western diet being so high in omega-6s, so that ratio is out? Is that the cause, or they're just deficient, like actually deficient or proportionally deficient?
There's actually, it's partially that, but it's also partially due to the fact that the majority now, over 50% of the world's global fish supply comes from aquaculture, so fish hatcheries. And fish hatcheries, there's a shortage of fish. So two-thirds, you know, over 65% of the wild fish catch every year is fish are caught to feed fish. Now, there's a shortage of that. So what do you do in a reality where you've got a shortage of biomass to feed fish, but you've got the aquaculture industry growing 30% year on year dramatically? So what they're doing, of course, is what happens is the fish meal and the fish oil in the feed has gone down substantially over the last, you know, this has been going on for decades. And what that means is when people go and buy salmon or, you know, buy a farm fish, they think they're getting a high source of omega-3. But the amount of actual omega-3 lipids in that salmon or fish in many cases is less than one-third of what it was, say, 20 years ago, and less than half what it was of even 5 to 10 years ago. And this is why we see a general populace that eats fish that is still deficient.
Yeah, that's so interesting. The fish supply is reducing for other fish and humans.
Yeah, well, you know, the fish meal and fish oil is only a finite source. And this is why, you know, my belief is to go direct to the source, not only an ethical or sustainable point of view, but from a quality point of view. Because anytime you get your nutrient directly from the source, it's in its pure, unadulterated, original format, you know. And just one thing I wanted to mention, Matt, just going back to, you know, I'm so passionate about educating on omega-3s, is that, you know, talking about those statistics about the everyday person and how they're deficient in the plant-based community, we have a much lesser body of tests. I think, you know, there's under 50,000 tests, but still quite a lot of tests that are reported as plant-based mm-hmm. when they do the test. But the result of the research is over 93% of people are under 50% deficient. So I'm really on a mission to get people that are on a plant-based diet to test and adjust by finding an omega-3 solution, you know, EPA and DHA. Certainly, you know, I'd like them to give them what I feel is the best product solutions, which is Phytality. But at the end of the day, they just need to get EPA and DHA, most people on a plant-based diet.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And for anybody wondering, I take these supplements myself, this Phytality, this phytoplankton. So I definitely think that, yeah, anyone who's deficient or even wanting to just maintain good health should be taking them as well. But I've got a question. And the reason this pops up is because whenever there's like a new supplement or a new technology or a new food, there's a degree of skepticism and like, oh, what's this latest superfood that someone's trying to sell me? So I'm curious, what do, let's say, the haters, what do the haters say? Or what are the people that are challenging the kind of work that you're doing say? And I just sort of bring that up because I liked the idea of like, you know, sort of calling out the elephant in the room of like, what are the skeptics saying about this conversation?
Yeah, that's a great question, Maddie. And that's probably the first time I've been asked that question. I think to answer that, I think the skeptics are only just becoming aware of what phytoplankton is. It's such a nuanced and new subject matter that really, you know, everyone in aquaculture and marine biology knows this, but the average person is just getting educated. So, you know, I think the main comment coming from skeptics is, I've seriously had people say this to me, which is amusing in my opinion, but no, fish make omega-3s. Don't tell me they come from plants. So
did a carnivore say that?
I just think, you know, I don't want to be disrespectful, but just people that haven't done their research, you know, that haven't looked at the food, the marine food chain. And so I guess that's one. And the other point that a skeptic may raise is the form of omega-3 is different in a fish than it was in its original form, mm-hmm. you know, due to the body's process, you know, how the body assimilates it. But we know this is not the case, you know, from the good work done by, you know, the University of Southampton, Flinders University in Australia, and many more. So I think, you know, I think, you know, seed oils get a big in recent times, you know, and seed oils is another subject matter where you really need to be nuanced. I see, you know, seed oils is a bit misunderstood, and there are some, you know, you do want to avoid taking too much omega-6 versus omega-3, and you also need to look at the process of how things are made. But I think when we come back and look at phytoplankton, we don't have a lot of haters at the moment because everyone knows that fish is healthy if it's clean, and the omega-3 from fish are healthy, you know, historically. So all we're telling people is, hey, we've got an ethical and sustainable solution. Get it directly from the source, because that source is not wild harvested. That source is grown, you know, offshore in a controlled environment where we don't have heavy metals, microplastics, pesticides, and any of that bioaccumulation that may happen in the ocean or a natural environment. So, you know, we guarantee purity because we grow it in a controlled environment and it's the source.
Yeah. And is it grown in salt water, like seawater?
Yeah. So how we normally produce phytoplankton, you can do it two ways. You can salt the water with natural salts and nutrients, or you can filtrate seawater and then add nutrients and salt depending on the salinity. So we do actually both. We have a couple of facilities. One of them is actually taking seawater, and the other we're salting with a natural salt and nutrient. So you can grow them either way, but at the end of the day, you need a certain salt pH and a certain nutrient bath mm-hmm. to recreate the ocean in a controlled environment for those lovely little plants to thrive.
Yeah, something that I'm thinking about in regards to, I guess, you know, the natural health community and the plant-based community, and even, you know, I'm not necessarily plant-based myself, but I try and be as, you know, quote unquote, natural as possible, as much as you can be in this day and age. But my question that I'm thinking about that is sort of one that might come up is that often when you eat, you know, a plant or an animal or whatever it is, sure, you might get some of the omegas, but also you get a lot of the supporting compounds and nutrients that help with absorption that are also needed by the body. And so I'm wondering with this, with phytoplankton as a food, is it just really, really high in omegas, or does it come with all of the other nutrients and supporting compounds that you would get from a kale leaf or a slice of steak that's got, you know, it's a nice little package of nutrition of which all is needed, not just one specific area, if that makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So phytoplankton, you know, being a primordial plant, you know, right at the start of the, you know, the evolutionary process, it's really diverse in its nutritional profile. So not only are we talking about these hard to get omega-3s, we've got, you know, the full range of amino acids, you know, so it's got a complex and complete amino acid range. About 45 to 50% of its total composition is proteins. We've got, you know, a full suite of micronutrients, vitamins, minerals, including B12, vitamin C. We've got, you know, all these minerals such as iron, zinc, copper, magnesium, full of antioxidants. So it's a really a complete whole food in a microscopic, highly bioavailable form. And that's why actually we brand it, just to hold the phytoplankton pure product up, we actually brand it as omega and multi.
That's the one I've got.
Because you're not only getting that full range of omegas, you're getting basically a whole food multi and omegas all in one.
And I guess in the plant-based conversation, the other thing that comes up in regards to, you know, whether it be supplementation or nutrition is B12. So what's, you know, if we're talking specifically to vegetarians and or vegans, where does B12 fall in this conversation?
Yeah, B12 is the hard to get nutrient for someone on a plant-based diet, mm-hmm. particularly vegan, if you're not eating eggs. So B12 becomes really critical, just like EPA and DHA, for someone that's vegan. So B12 is hard to find in a whole food form. You know, normally the version of B12 in plants is what we call analog, so it's not absorbable.
Yeah.
And in the ocean, you know, most forms of other algae also have a non-absorbable form. What we see in phytoplankton, it has a majority absorbable form, which is quite rare. Mm-hmm. In saying that, so in phytoplankton, you're getting a reasonable dose of B12 in every gram. But I think B12 is under the guidelines for B12 are too low. What I personally do and what I recommend to others is take multiple sources of B12. You know, I'm wanting to take, you know, 5 to 10 micrograms of B12 a day, as an example. Mm-hmm. B12 in the phytoplankton is only 2 micrograms per 1 gram. So I'm really getting probably half of my B12 from phytoplankton, and then I'm actually dosing more B12 because I think one of the things that will happen in the coming years is the recommendations for B12 will go up.
I agree.
I think they're far, far too low, the minimum recommendation. So my tip is multiple B12 imports, particularly if you're on a plant-based diet or a vegan.
Yeah, I suspect that's the case as well, especially because governments and, you know, food and health and nutrition, I guess, that is driven by the government is really pushing this plant-based lifestyle and, you know, beyond burgers and impossible meat and stuff like that. And so inevitably that means we come across less and less B12 in the natural food chain unless it's fortified or we're supplementing it. And yeah, vegans, as we know, are really struggle to get B12. So I agree. I think they're going to go up over time.
Yeah, absolutely. B12 is a key one. D3 as well. Mm. But of course, in Australia, we get quite a bit of sun. But particularly for people, you know, in Northern Europe or in other environments, D3 is the other key nutrient.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I would say as well, for those that haven't been to Australia that are listening, Australia is enormous. And so where Mark is in Australia, he gets plenty of sun. But I'm down here in Melbourne, which isn't that far away from Antarctica in the grand scheme of things. And yeah, winter, 6 to 9 months of the year, it's very, very difficult to get vitamin D from the sun. And that's assuming that you're actually outside and most of us are inside out of the cold. So yeah, that's another one that I bang on about a lot on the podcast and with clients is supplementing D3.
Yeah, D3 is also important. I'm 2,500 kilometers north of Maddie up yeah. here near Bundaberg, by the way, in Queensland. So good amounts of D3 if you know, on tap. But yeah, D3 is also important. Yeah, one thing, Matt, I get asked a lot, you know, we have a couple of products in our range. We have the Clean Omega, you know, which is the DHA, and then we have, of course, the phytoplankton Omega and Multi. I get asked quite a bit, well, why do you have both products in the range? You know, and what, you know, one of course is predominantly EPA and one is predominantly DHA. And so I thought it'd be good just to share our, you know, growing perspective on these two products and how to take them.
Yeah.
I mean, my general opinion is EPA is the most important of the two and getting higher EPA than DHA. But I do believe, you know, taking a preformed amount of DHA. So I would recommend at least 250 milligrams of pure DHA, which mm-hmm. is one of our soft gels, or just a small amount on our dropper bottle product. So a smaller dose of DHA complemented with, for vegans, 2 grams of phytoplankton. And for those mm-hmm. who aren't vegan or vegetarian, 1 gram. But your dose of phytoplankton should be typically higher than your dose of clean omega-3. But taking a preformed DHA with the EPA really is just a guarantee that you know you're getting enough conversion
Yeah, thanks for sharing. I appreciate that.
You're getting enough DHA regardless of the conversion capabilities, yeah. So I personally recommend taking them in combination. That would be my tip.
Yeah, fantastic. And I guess where online can everybody get their hands on this stuff? So, you know, like I said, it's definitely something that I recommend and share with clients and friends and family members and I take myself. So let's tell the people where to find Mark and Vitality.
Yeah. So you can find us online in Australia at phyty.com.au. So that's phyty.com.au. In the UK, you can find us on vitality.co.uk. And very shortly, we'll be launching in America. So you can go to vitality.com. And for Canadian or US buyers, the .com site will be up shortly. So you can, that's where you find us. We also have a delicious, for those who want a formulated super greens with phytoplankton as a hero product, we have the phytoplankton super greens. And we've actually designed that as a delicious ready to go version where you just add water. So we've got a natural pineapple vanilla flavor. And that's a really funky way of getting your phytoplankton, you know, like who would have thought that you could take a green smoothie instead of a fish oil or an algal oil capsule 5 or 10 years ago. So skip the fish and up the greens.
Well, and you've sent me that one before and I really like the pineapple flavor. It's really quite good. Whereas most people think green powders, they're going to have to, you know, put it, you know, heaps of fruit into a smoothie and sort of drown out the horrible, you know, dirt-like flavor, but it's nothing like that. It's actually really, really palatable, like to the point that it's delicious. So yeah, I would recommend that one too. But obviously, if you're not someone that does smoothies every day and you struggle to keep up with that practice or, you know, add water, yeah, the capsules are just as effective.
Yeah, no, yeah, we've tried to make it in a different dose format for everyone. The person on the run, you know, they like flavor, but they don't have time to blend a smoothie. The person that likes it raw or the person that wants to take it in a capsule form. We have it in the three different versions.
Yeah, amazing. Well, thanks for coming onto the show. Like I'm always learning stuff whenever I'm in conversation with you. So I'm sure that everybody listening is also learning stuff. So thank you for sharing some of the Phytality stuff with us today. But before we wrap up, what is one piece of health information that you wish more people knew about?
I think one piece of information that I hope to, you know, transfer to more people is really that not all forms of omega-3 are the same. You know, the constant question I'm even asked, and even from naturopaths or dietitians and nutritionists is, oh, you know, I've prescribed my client, you know, hemp chia or flax, and therefore they're going to get enough long-chain omega-3. So I think the thing that I'd like to educate people the most about is not all omega-3s are the same. It's really important that you get a preformed version of EPA and some complementary DHA. Yeah, that would be mine.
Yeah, thank you. We really need to get you on in front of clinics or like on some podcasts where they're educating practitioners so that they can start to understand this better. Because, you know, I've been at uni studying this stuff a few times and you sort of get a little bit of everything in that education journey, but you've obviously gone super deep. So I think we need to get you in front of people doing the educating.
Yeah, no, that's what we do. And actually every second Wednesday, for any practitioners out there that may be listening to this, what we do is every second Wednesday, we put a public link out and we welcome anyone to come and learn about, you know, the more technical aspects, the type of lipids, the quality. So we're actually doing one tonight on the phytoplankton and the clean omega range. So feel free to follow us on socials or go to our website and you'll type of see our schedule for these public, you know, practitioner or clinical dietitian, nutritionist education sessions that happen fortnightly.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that. And thanks for being on the show. It's been a good conversation.
Thank you, Maddie. I mean, I love what you're doing. Yeah, keep up the great job of, you know, educating, you know, everyone out there how to live a cleaner, healthier, you know, more prosperous life. And I'm grateful and really happy to be on the show again. Thank you for inviting me.
No worries. We'll catch you again soon.
Thanks, Matt. You have a great day and take care, everyone.
Bye. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast. Simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember, too, that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.